Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk about a college rock band that formed in the 80s with a construction-related name.
And no, it's not Pavement. I like that
one. That's a good one.
All right, for this episode, there's me, I'm Jim Lenihan. There's Patrick over here.
Hi, I'm Patrick Foster.
The show is Rock in the Suburbs, but we have three others joining us. We have Rob Gates here in basement.
Hey, Jim.
And we have Eric Lorenz via the Zoom in Illinois.
Hello.
Hello. And then we have the one and only Shadow.
Shadow, right, roaming around.
Although then he just left. That was his cue to leave. Yeah. Like, I don't want anything to do with any of this.
He was trying to stand in that very small space between Rob's legs and the table legs. That's right. Not nearly enough to fit Shadow.
Yeah, if you've seen my legs, there's definitely not enough for me to fit Shadow.
So, okay. Here's what we're going to do today. Today's going to be a patron episode with Eric, and he picks the topic, but he told me ahead of time what the topic's going to be, and then I asked Eric if it was okay to invite Rob, because this was a topic Rob had wanted to talk about quite some time ago, and you know, we hadn't gotten to it, and so I think the stars just sort of aligned here to do it today.
Perfect.
Right?
Yep.
And Eric said that was cool, and we're gonna have a great conversation here on a band that both of you like and I know almost nothing about. So this is not that this is necessarily new, listeners will recognize this trope.
Yeah.
The band Jim knows nothing about. But anyway, Eric, what is that? What or who is that band?
The band is Dump Truck.
Dump Truck. All right. And Rob, you're well familiar with Dump Truck.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right. And Patrick as well?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with Dump Truck during what I would consider to be their late 80s period,
right,
when they played a lot in DC. They used to come down from the Boston area and play at the 930 Club. So either opening or playing with other bands. So I was able to see him three or four times during that period.
Okay. So my familiarity with Dump Truck is that last night on my drive from seeing a show in Silver Spring, Maryland, back here to Ashburn, Virginia, I listened to Dump Truck for that 45-minute drive. And I got to tell you, I'll let you guys get into it and fill me in here, but I got to tell you, I'm really upset that I did not know this band before because I was like, this is all me.
Right,
this
in,
is like
right in your wheelhouse.
And when you said late 80s, I'm like, that's exactly the era you can identify just from listening to their sound, right? So anyway, okay, Eric, kick us off here.
All right. Well, Dump Truck is a band with an interesting and somewhat unfortunate story. They were active in the Boston area from 1983 to 1991, as Patrick alluded to. Then they broke up, and they reformed in Austin, Texas in 1994, and they maintain at least some level of activity to the present day. Dump Truck has had a shifting cast of musicians over the years, with the only continuous member being guitarist, vocalist, and principal songwriter Seth Tiven. The band's music has been described at different times as college rock, new wave, jangle pop, alternative, roots rock, and Americana. Despite this variety of musical genres, the lyrics are consistently melancholy or downcast. Now, Dump Truck has released seven studio albums between 1983 and 2018. The first three were released from 1983 to 1987, and to me, this is classic Dump Truck. The next three albums were released between 1994 and 2001, and the most recent album was released in 2018. What I'd like to do is focus on the first three classic Dump Truck albums and also say a few words about the legal dispute between Dump Truck and its label that was the undoing for the first phase of the band. Then we can briefly touch on the band's later releases.
I'm glad you said that, Eric, because as far as I'm concerned, the first three albums are, as you said, classic Dump Truck. I've listened to the albums after that, but they don't hold a candle to those first three.
I would agree with that.
It's funny, too, because as I was saying, listening last night, I just kind of put the artist on shuffle on Spotify. You know how you could do that and then just play stuff from different albums. But the ones that of what I heard, the stuff that was really resonating with me was from this album called Positively Dump Truck. Yep. So I'm sure we're going to get to that. Yep. Right. So, OK.
All right. Well, their first album was called D is for Dump Truck. It was released on Incus Records in 1983. Then after the band signed with Big Time Records, the album was re-released on that label. For this album, the band was a trio consisting of Seth Tiven, guitarist, vocalist, songwriter Kirk Swan, and two different drummers who each recorded six songs with Tiven and Swan. Due to the absence of a bassist, Tiven and Swan played bass on each other's songs. The production on this album is lo-fi, almost demo-like, and the sound has been described as falling somewhere between Joy Division and the DBs, or alternatively between Television and REM. Other references include hint of the early Del Fuegos and Mission of Burma. Overall, the album is darker and more arty than Dump Truck's later releases, although Seth Tiven did return to some of the arty influences on the later albums without Kirk Swan. Some of my favorite songs on Diaz for Dump Truck include How Come, Repetition, The Haunt, Night, and Things Go Wrong. And if I had to pick one song, it would be Night.
Okay, and that was 83?
83, yes.
83, okay. When did you become familiar with Dump Truck, Rob?
I became familiar with Dump Truck in 1988.
Okay.
And went to a college radio convention in New York City, and the guy with whom I was with was looking through the Village Voice to see which bands were playing in town. And he said, "Oh my God, Dump Truck is at CBGB's. We have to go." I'm like, "Dump Truck? What kind of name is that? Dump Truck?" He's like, "Dude, trust me, we have to go." And so they were headlining at CBGB's, which meant they went on, I think, probably about 1 a.m.
Right.
And there were a whole bunch of other acts in front. I was just all wigged out by going into CBGB's, you know, and you see all this stuff on the wall and the Ramones and all that business. But that was my introduction to Dump Truck. And interestingly, really my introduction to live alternative music.
Mm. That's so cool.
That is very cool.
And so the band is from Boston.
Yes.
And you're from Massachusetts,
yes.
Right? So did that have an instant sort of connection for you, or was that sort of immaterial?
Well, when I found out they were from Boston, I got back to Boston because I was in college at the time, up in Boston at
right.
Northeastern.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you got Dump Truck, like they play around town.
Yeah.
Like they play all the time. So I probably saw them about a dozen times.
Wow.
Between probably 1988 and 1990.
Wow, that's cool.
Pure prime Dump Truck.
That's
sure.
So cool. Yeah. What about you, Eric? How did you get into this band?
I became familiar with them in 86 with the release of Positively Dump Truck, which we'll talk about
okay.
in a few minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, as we mentioned, the band's second album, released in 1986, was Positively Dump Truck. Again, you have Seth Tiven and Kirk Swan taking turns as lead guitarist, lead vocalist, and songwriter. But now the band is a quartet with a fixed bassist and drummer. Positively also represents a decided step up on the production side, with Don Dixon producing the album at Mitch Easter's mm-hmm. drive-in studio in Winston-Salem. The songs are tighter and poppier than on Diaz for Dump Truck, with some of the songs even incorporating keyboards courtesy of Don Dixon. This is a consistently strong set of songs, comparable in my mind to what REM was putting out at the time, and my favorite Dump Truck album. My favorite songs include the album opener, Back Where I Belong, as well as Winter, Alone, Seven Steps Up, and the two closing songs on the original vinyl, Walk Into Mirror and Ethics. I especially like Ethics for its instrumental break featuring backwards guitars and the somewhat ominous chorus, So Here I Sit, Waiting, Thinking of Things to Take Up My Time. I also should mention that there is a great YouTube video of the band playing at Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey around the time of this album. The video runs about an hour and 15 minutes, and it's exactly what you'd expect from a quartet with two lead guitarists that were college radio darlings in the mid-1980s. You can find that video on YouTube by searching for Dump Truck at Maxwell's.
Nice. I did come across that earlier in the week.
So it's
I lied a little bit. I watched a little bit of YouTube stuff earlier in the week, but anyway, okay. Yeah.
It's worth watching.
Okay, so this is it. Would you suggest that this would be the entry point for somebody who is unfamiliar with the band?
I think so. Their third album, For the Country, gets a lot of critical acclaim as well, but this was right in my wheelhouse at the time with the, you know, the college rock, the jangly guitars, the twin guitar attack, and strong song. So for me, I would say start there, but I think you would be served well by starting it For the Country also. That's just, it does not have both Seth Tiven and Kirk Swan. It just has Seth Tiven with another guitarist, Kevin Salem.
Got it. Now, this makes perfect sense to me when you mentioned Don Dixon and Mitch Easter, because I did not know that. And as I was listening to it, I was like, God, this sounds exactly like the kind of music I like from that era. Right. So the idea that there is that kind of pedigree to it, I think, really, you know, like I said, just makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I think that's a key detail, at least from my perspective. I mean, that was the reason I first came across that record, because one of the things me and my circle of record collecting, record hound friends would do is look for anything produced by Mitch Easter or at Drive-In Studio or, you know, Don Dixon, because we were such REM fans, like massive REM fans. So anything with that magical thing, you know, somebody would buy it and the rest of us would tape it or something like that. And then, like I said, Dump Truck played a lot, and they came down and played with, I remember seeing them one time with a band. I don't know, Rob and Eric, if you guys have heard of a band called The Neats. They were also from Boston. And they recorded on Ace of Hearts, which was Mission of Burma's label. And they had kind of a similar jangly, you know, at times angular sound. Although I feel like Dump Truck, as Eric very well described, had a wider range of influences than a lot of those early Boston, you know, jangle pop bands. A little bit of country and some other stuff in there.
I heard some of that.
Was deeper than what a lot of these bands were doing. And I think. You know, that country tinge of the Del Fuegos is a really good touch point as well. But yeah, that key, you know, moment of producing it with Don and at Drive-In Studios probably turned a lot of people in the '80s onto that record. And it is very, very good. And I listened to it yesterday. I'm just surprised how well it holds up. I mean, it really does.
Totally does.
Yeah. It sounds weirdly contemporary right now. It really kind of does.
Well, there's a certain lo-fi aspect to it. Yeah. I think that suits that's today as well.
Hopefully coming back
but
around.
But it's so funny that you guys mentioned Americana because I was almost like afraid to say that. I was like, because I heard some of that influence, but I was like, I don't know if it's what you'd call Americana exactly, but you can definitely hear a little bit of that in there. And it's funny because I was thinking, for whatever reason, this is not exactly right, but I kind of felt like they remind me of the Meat Puppets in some ways.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I don't know, just the kind of like, just the kind of feel of the songs.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Yeah, that little country psychedelic twin is in there. Yeah. And I think it's important too, and Rob can speak to this, you know, there's so many colleges in Boston and so many college radio stations that there was always a lot of music, you know, that you would hear. So I think a lot of bands from Boston were exposed to a lot more than just sort of,
you know,
regular punk records and stuff like that. So,
well, and they'd often go see each other play.
Yeah, exactly. Great point.
Yeah. So you could go to a show, you know, like a Mission of Burma show, and you could see, you know, like, Seth Tiven from Dump Truck would be there and, you know, so-and-so from the Pixies and so on and so forth. I mean, you could spot people in the audience going to each other's shows.
It was kind of neat.
Yeah, that's right. It was kind of neat at that time.
Yeah.
Because like I said, once I saw them in New York, it was like there's this huge club thing going on with these awesome bands and I can go see them.
Yeah. For like a couple bucks
for
or whatever.
Couple bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, Eric, what about in Illinois? How did Dump Truck, did they make their way out there at all?
They did. I saw them in, I think, late 87 or early 88 when they were touring for the Country. So Kirk Swan was not with the band anymore at that point. They probably were kicking around Chicago before then, but I just wasn't aware of them until like mid 86. So I would have, you know, not that wouldn't have pricked up my ears to hear that Dump Truck was playing.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, several months after Positively Dump Truck was released at the end of their tour, at the end of 1986, Kirk Swan decided to leave the band along with replacement bassist Spike Priggen, who had toured with Dump Truck on the Positively tour. After the split, Seth Tiven and drummer Sean Devlin recruited a new second guitarist, Kevin Salem, and a new bassist, Tom Shad. That band went to the UK in the spring of 1987 and started recording a new album at Rockfield Studios in Wales with producer Hugh Jones. As an aside, Hugh Jones's production credits at that time included producing and or engineering for several bands that we've talked about previously, such as Echo and the Bunnymen, The Teardrop Explodes, and The Undertones, as well as Adam and the Ants, The Damned, and Modern English. Dump Truck's third album, For the Country, was released in September of 87. That album incorporates more elements of jangle pop than its predecessor, as well as including hints of alt-country or Americana. It also has a broader instrumental palette, including Hammond organ and pedal steel guitar. My favorite songs from this album include the opener and my overall favorite, Island. Carefree, Hung Out on a Line, Going Nowhere, For the Country, and Barking Up the Wrong Tree. And this album really had a big label push behind it until the label started to run out of money, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes.
Okay.
So to me, this is their best album.
Okay.
I love this album. In fact, I think this is one of my Desert Island albums.
Wow, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I really, really love this album. Kevin Salem, I think, is awesome at guitar. And I just forgot that. Who is the bassist again, Eric?
Tom Shad.
Yeah, I think Tom handled that music a little bit better than Spike did. I actually got to see them both play because when they were back in Boston, you know, Tom wouldn't be able to play. They'd invite Spike to sit in. And Spike didn't seem to handle the... And granted, he may have been a little rusty because, you know, he hadn't been playing the stuff on tour than Tom did. But I saw both Tom and Spike play. And when both Tom and Kevin were there playing, I thought they were phenomenal as a group. I should point out that Kevin and Spike left... the band after the Positively tour because the tour like just wore them down from what I understand. Like they just couldn't, they wanted a break from it.
Yeah.
Kirk, not Kevin, Kirk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah. Love this album. And Eric's recommendations are spot on.
Okay.
Good. So while on tour to support that album for the country, Dump Truck discovered that its label, Big Time Records, was having financial difficulties because checks issued by the label were bouncing. Around the same time, Seth Tiven also learned that the label had failed to renew the band's contract prior to its expiration date. Notwithstanding the contract expiration, Big Time Records was negotiating to sell Dump Truck's contract to a larger label. The band learned about this, and their lawyer wrote a letter to the larger label informing them of the situation and asking them to negotiate directly with the band. Big Time Records found out about that communication and sued Dump Truck for $5 million. As a result, no other labels were willing to enter into a contract with the band while a dispute was pending. The band countersued Big Time Records and eventually received a default judgment as the label was going bankrupt. Dump Truck received the rights to their master recordings, but then one of the creditors filed a lien for rights to those recordings in connection with the bankruptcy. So just a bad experience with the music biz. And due to those pending legal proceedings, the band broke up in 1991 and Seth Tiven moved to Austin, Texas.
Another example how labels and money and all that can just destroy a great band.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
I mean, these guys were clearly on their way.
Yeah.
And, you know, they hit this wall of lawyers and money, and that's the end.
Yeah, and I can say being in Illinois at the time, I didn't hear anything about the lawsuit, and I was just kind of wondering, well, when's the next Dump Truck album coming out?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's too bad, too, because like you said, the timing was probably ideal for them to really take off going into the 90s, right?
Yeah. I mean, if they had been on a label like IRS, for example, or a more stable label that probably better understood, you know, how to handle that stuff with more experience, they would have, I think, really, really thrived. And it is really sad the way that worked out.
Yeah. Okay. So where do we go from here?
All right. Well, during the period from 88 to 91, while the various legal proceedings were ongoing, Seth Tiven continued recording with drummer Sean Devlin and various guest artists. Those recordings were released in 1995 as the album Days of Fear. And around the 94-95 timeframe, while Tiven was in Austin, he was approached by guitarist Alan Durham about reforming Dump Truck with Austin-based musicians. Tiven agreed, and subsequently they were joined by drummer George Duran and a variety of different bass players. Tiven and Durham still make up the core of Dump Truck, playing in Austin, Texas, and occasionally doing shows in the Northeast with original band members. Tiven, Durham, and Duran, along with other musicians, have released three albums as Dump Truck. They are Terminal, Lemmings Travel to the Sea, and the most recent album, Wrecked, which was released in 2018 after a gap of over 15 years. All of these second phase albums are worth listening to, but I have to agree with Rob that the first three are classic Dump Truck, so I'm not going to say much more about them, except that they tend more towards the Americana or roots rock end of the spectrum as opposed to the early jangle rock sound. One other note, Lemmings Travel to the Sea, which they released in 2001, is also notable for including a second disc of live tracks from 86 and 88. These tracks sound a lot like the YouTube video I mentioned earlier. In addition, the live tracks showcase Dump Truck's good taste in cover tunes with two songs by Bob Dylan, one by Neil Young, and another Sex Drive by fellow college rock heroes, The Embarrassment.
another cool band, The Embarrassment.
Okay.
Yeah, from Kansas, I believe. I'll tell you this, and I don't know if I've told this story before, but it's probably fitting to tell it right here, you know, because it has a sad ending. And I once saw Dump Truck at the 930 Club. They were the headliner, and the opening act was a band called the Miracle Legion. Mm-hmm. You guys heard of them? They were from the Northeast somewhere. I don't think they're from Boston. I think they put something out on Incus Records. I believe their first or second one was on that same label that Dump Truck, D for Dump Truck, was on. Anyway, I had a date to the show, and at the end of the show, my date had sort of like drifted away at one point during the Dump Truck set, and it turns out she was making out with the drummer from Miracle Legion backstage. So I was a pretty sad guy at the end of that. And she still asked me for a ride home, so it wasn't a good night. But I gave her a ride home and didn't strand her in DC, trying to get back to the suburbs. Not as easy as it is these days to get back.
That's right. Oh, poor Patrick.
Yeah. Wow. Well, later it turned out the girl had a reputation. Yeah. So probably deserved it. Sadness all around.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the funny thing, Eric. On Spotify, at least, I assume it's kind of similar on other services. Mm-hmm. You can find D is for Dump Truck, Positively Dump Truck, and For the Country. And then after that, it has Days of Fear and Terminal.
Okay.
So that's not everything, right? That's not the complete.
No, there's a couple more.
Yeah. But you got the core, those core three, those early three are there right for anyone to listen to.
Yeah. Right. And I'm just noticing this right now. I'm looking on Discogs. There's a collection called Hall of Fame, H-A-U-L, which is a very clever turn of phrase for Dump Truck. Hall of Fame, a collection. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but it looks like it has, you know, a pretty decent overview of everything. That might be something interesting for folks. But have either of you guys heard that? Do you think it's a good selection?
I've heard of it. Okay. I've not heard it or have not seen the track list.
Yep.
Yeah, in the same way.
Yeah, it looks interesting. It was put out on Ryko Disc, apparently, in 2006. So Ryko Disc is a really good reissue label.
Well, it doesn't have, it has Going Nowhere, but it doesn't have Going Nowhere going into For the Country. Mm. And that's one of those,
you got to have that.
You can't, do that split. That's, you know, the old Led Zeppelin.
That's a good point. That's right. You know. Yeah, the way you heard it originally.
Heartbreaker, Living Heart. Sure. Yeah,
that's right.
Can't split those, so.
But yeah, Ryko Disc did reissue some of the stuff
on
CD,
cool. Yeah,
as well. Although it looks like they're pretty expensive now, so they must be out of print.
Yeah,
well, Ryko Disc is gone, right? Or is Ryko Disc still around?
I don't know. That's a good question.
So anyway,
I see that Jim DeRogatis wrote the liner notes for this collection, so that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real band.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this was a band that was going places.
And you know, like Jim said earlier, when Jim said, you know, I was listening to them and I was like, why didn't I know about this? Because this is right in my wheelhouse. Yeah. So if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know about Dump Truck, you're in for very nice surprise.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. But you can't go back in time with Rob and see them play a dozen times in Boston in the 80s, which is a drag. Yeah.
Rob, anything else on Dump Truck?
No, I think that's a good, I think Eric's covered just about everything that I would cover. You know, I would say that their live performances could be very hit or miss, like most bands, but I saw them. They were really not good on some nights and just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Interesting. On others.
Do you credit Dump Truck with sort of like opening up your interest to like other bands as well? You mentioned that it was kind of like the first like sort of alternative show that you went to.
Yeah, I think from a live music perspective, I mean, I was spinning records up on at the radio station.
Oh, cool.
At Northeastern. But somehow I managed to get the classic rock show, go figure.
That's awesome.
But, you know, I was well exposed then, you know, in that period, the late 80s. I mean, you know, of course, we had the REM stuff and, you know, Love and Rockets and all that alternative stuff that was coming in. So I was exposed to it. But again, had never really experienced it live. In the way that I had experienced that Dump Truck show, you know, sort of that was sort of the gateway of like starting to see a whole bunch of live bands in Boston, like going through the Boston Phoenix at the time and saying, oh, yeah, Big Dipper is playing here, or Dinosaur Jr. is over here,
Big Dipper,
and
Big Dipper,
Mission
yeah.
of Burma, and, you know, Volcano Sons, and, oh, and yeah. a whole bunch of
great band.
Other. I actually went to school with the guitars for Volcano
Did
Sons.
Did you really? Yeah. John Williams. Wow.
No. Chuck Hahn.
Okay. Got yeah. it. Who came in a little bit later. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been exciting to be in Boston.
Oh, my God.
That era.
Kidding me?
Being yeah. able to see all these bands. That's incredible.
Really exciting.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Once you've, you know, I sort of put one and one together, like, hey, there's more music besides that was recorded in the 70s.
Right. That's amazing.
Interesting footnote. One or two of the members of The Embarrassment went on to join Big Dipper.
Did they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did not know that either.
Very cool. The Embarrassment. We got to talk about that at some point, Eric. There you go.
All right. Well, Eric, I find this really interesting, too, because, you know, Eric comes on and he likes to do this, like showcase a certain band that,
Love
you
it.
Know, a band or albums that mean something to him. And so, like you mentioned, you know, we had Echo and the Bunnyman, Teardrop Explodes, Undertones, all this stuff we've talked about before. But Dump Truck being even like more obscure, mm-hmm. right? This is this must be an important band to you.
Oh, yeah. My friends and I really got into them. Around the time of Positively and For the Country. And then that's who I went to see the band with in Chicago in 87 or 88. And then we were all, you know, waiting with bated breath for the next album, and it never came along. So,
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's got to be a bad feeling, too, especially at a time when you can't just open up your phone and get information on what might be happening with the group.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's true. All right. Well, thanks very much, Eric. This has been great.
Really good.
So, what song should we play out with?
I'll let Rob pick.
Play out with Carefree.
Carefree, okay. All right, well, take care, Eric. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for being a supporter of the show.
Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome.
If anyone wants to comment on the works of Dump Truck, we'd love to hear it. You can call and leave a message. 612-440-1984. Yep. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at Suburbs Pod. All right. Let's get out of here.
Okay.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Rob Gates.
And I'm Eric Lorenz.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks,
talk
guys.
To you later.
Funny Kevin Salem story. One night when I had seen them, they'd come off stage between sets and he was standing right. He's a tall guy, looks like Elvis Costello, plays like Elvis Costello, sounds like Elvis Costello. And he's standing right in front of me and I wanted to tell him, like, dude, that was an awesome set. For some reason in my head, I got him confused with Gilson Lavis from Squeeze.
Hmm.
And I kept saying to him, like, hey, Gilson. And he's just completely ignoring me. I'm like, what kind of a-hole is this? Like, I'm like waving at him, like yelling his name. He's like, and then later on, I'm like, oh, duh.